evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 15, 2016. A UK-based advocacy group says South Sudan national security agents are preventing South Sudanese from leaving the country.
We are calling on the government to ensure that people can leave the country if they so please, to guarantee safe passage of civilians who are fleeing violence and allow them to seek refuge both inside and outside of the country.
And civilians in Lanya County say they are too afraid to return home after this week's shootout.
The terrible situation now is the matter of rain, and we have women and children who are in the bush, and there's nothing to eat at the moment, since you know it's the rain season. Yeah, we are worried because the civilians cannot access the town when the soldiers are still there.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International says national security agents are deliberately blocking South Sudanese from leaving the country. Elizabeth Deng says national security operatives are ordering airline companies not to allow South Sudanese men to board flights leaving Juba International Airport. Deng says Amnesty International also received reports of South Sudanese men being blocked from entering Uganda at the border town of Nimule. She says there is clear evidence that the government is violating South Sudanese citizens' constitutional rights of freedom of movement.
We've repeatedly heard of men trying to leave the country and being told South Sudanese men are not allowed to leave. They've told us about being told things like, you know, you're South Sudanese, why are you leaving the country? You need to stay here and fight. So it appears to be quite systematic, both at Juba International Airport as well as at the border crossing into Uganda at Nimule. So it's a very unfortunate situation. It's, of course, a violation of human rights, both the freedom of movement. So we are calling on the government to ensure that people can leave the country if they so please, to guarantee safe passage of civilians who are fleeing violence and allow them to seek refuge both inside and outside of the country.
And was there an official circular circulated by the government, or was there a notice put at the border or at the airport, or this is just some soldiers deciding on their own that people should not leave the country?
We have not been able to determine the source of this practice, but the frequency and the number of cases that we've heard about indicate that it is systematic, that the directive is coming from probably a senior level, because it is being implemented consistently and systematically by immigration officers and national security agents. I will say we have heard of a few cases of South Sudanese men being allowed to leave the country, you know, perhaps for educational reasons or because there are individuals, because of their identity or activities, you know, are deemed okay to leave the country. So basically there is heavy scrutiny by the immigration and national security agents at the airport, and many people are prevented from leaving. We've heard reports of people's passports being confiscated, also of people being detained at the airport by national security agents.
I also heard from some officials yesterday that it also boils down to ethnicity. Did you hear that from people you've spoken to?
Well, we have not gathered sufficient information to, you know, say with certainty that they are allowing one ethnicity and not allowing another. But the few cases that we've heard of individuals who have been allowed to leave, those individuals are of Dinka ethnicity. You know, we can't say what the nature of the directive is, but I think from what we've been able to observe, it seems as though it may be applied somewhat selectively, either based on ethnicity or perceived political affiliation or the types of connections a person might have. I think basically the decision-making is a bit arbitrary.
And how about South Sudanese who could be having dual citizenship, like they're South Sudanese who have American citizenship, British,
right,
Australian, or other Western countries? Are they also facing the same problem?
Yes, they all also face problems, and this is, you know, quite shocking. Both the United States and the Canadian embassies have sent circulars to their citizens in South Sudan, stating that U.S. and Canadian dual nationals have been denied departure from Juba International Airport, that they have that there have been cases where passports have been seized or individuals have been detained. So, you know, the fact that this information is coming, you know, not only from Amnesty Human Rights Organization, but from these governments who have been trying to evacuate their citizens and therefore, you know, have been able to observe clearly the patterns at the airport, I think is very clear evidence that something very sinister is taking place. You know, it's disappointing that the government is denying it. Yeah, I hope that they will come forth and explain exactly what the official policy is.
That's Elizabeth Deng, South Sudan researcher for Amnesty International, speaking with me from Nairobi earlier today. South Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Akwei Bona-Malwal, told South Sudan in Focus yesterday that the government is not preventing South Sudanese from leaving the country. Officials with the World Food Programme say the main warehouse in Juba was looted in the days following the fighting that erupted last week between South Sudan Army and SPLA-IO forces. WFP officials say the warehouse contains food, fuel and other emergency items meant to help hundreds of thousands of displaced people around the country. As Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba, the agency is calling on the looters to return the stolen goods.
Head of WFP programs in South Sudan, Sean Hughes, says huge amounts of food meant to feed desperately needy people in Juba is being stolen.
Warehouse in Juba is in the process of being looted for the last 2 days. Inside that main warehouse in Juba, there's approximately 4,500 metric tons of food that's intended for poor and vulnerable people in South Sudan.
Hughes says the stolen food was meant to feed more than 200,000 people. He says the stolen food could make a difference.
Cereals, vegetable oil, pulses, and also specialized nutrition products for the treatment of acute malnutrition for children and pregnant and breastfeeding mothers.
WFP condemned the looting. Hughes says the government should track down the looters and make sure the food is returned.
An absolutely despicable act, the looting of humanitarian assistance intended for the most vulnerable people in South Sudan.
WFP says, despite the looting, it will continue to provide life-saving assistance to thousands of vulnerable people in Juba and across South Sudan. At its main compound in Juba, WFP hosts approximately 3,000 people displaced from their homes during military clashes over the past week. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The Rwandan government says it will not arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir when he visits the country tomorrow. Rwanda's Minister for Foreign Affairs and Cooperation says her country is under no obligation to arrest President Bashir, who will be attending the African Union summit. From Kigali, Mungume Devs Rwakarinj files this report.
Despite facing genocide and war crimes charged by the International Criminal Court stemming from Sudanese government attacks in Darfur, Foreign Minister Louise Mushikiwabo told journalists in Kigali yesterday that Mr. Bashir will be accorded a presidential welcome like any other head of state when he arrives in Kigali on Saturday.
Rwanda is the host of African leaders invited by the African Union, and unequivocally, anybody who's invited by the African Union will be here in Kigali and will be very welcome, will be under the protection of this country.
President Bashir was indicted by the ICC in 2009 for crimes against humanity. The ICC also wants Bashir arrested and tried on 2 counts of war crimes and 3 counts of genocide allegedly committed in Sudan's western region of Darfur. The ICC has urged the Rwandan government to arrest Mr. Bashir once he steps foot in Rwanda. Mushikiwabo insists Rwanda is under no obligation to arrest Bashir.
Rwanda has not adhered or subscribed to the Rome Statute, so we have no obligation. We have no right to arrest anybody. But the request from the ICC to the government of Rwanda 2 days ago, we view it as a distraction, and we are too busy to pay attention to that kind of thing.
The Rome Statute of the ICC is the treaty that established the International Criminal Court, which has jurisdiction over persons accused of the most serious crimes of international concern. Member countries are obliged by law to arrest anyone indicted by this court. Mr. Bashir is the only head of state facing war crimes. African leaders have accused the ICC of applying justice selectively. Minister Mushikiwabo says President Bashir and other African leaders will discuss the possibility of pulling out of the ICC.
Many African countries believe that it's become a very politicized court and that Africa needs to take a position. But obviously withdrawal is a sovereign matter, as is joining the court. And so, but what I know is that a number of countries are ready to withdraw.
African leaders have suggested establishing their own court to try those accused of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, reports of insecurity in Yei River State. That story coming up shortly.
Political conventions are a critical part of the American electoral process. Our job is to put the conventions, the candidates, and the issues into context for our listeners. Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic Party's conventions starting July 18th on VOA.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
Did you have any fears when you were a child?
Yes, because sometimes I have bad dreams and also I do fear elderly people.
Never wanted to lose my grandmother at that time, and she's the only one that can understand my situation. Beside her, no one else.
I was scared of masquerades, masked men, monsters, all those things. I was scared of them.
From fire, and then also elders. They used to tell me, like, you know, don't play with your elders. Yeah, I used to fear my elders, and then also fire. I don't used to come near fire. Next where there is fire, I don't come next to it.
Yes, as a kid, I was afraid of the dark. Every time there was darkness, I was afraid. I think generally most kids are afraid of the dark.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents in the newly created Maridi State are decrying the height of insecurity on the road leading in and out of the state capital, Maridi. They say they consider all major roads impassable to other states due to killings and robberies by armed youth. Maridi State's acting governor acknowledges the roads are not safe for any commuters. Gift Friday reports for VOA from Yambio.
Jacob Juma is a driver who often uses the Maridi Yei Road. Juma says, aside from the poor condition of the road, frequent armed attacks on commuters, it is impossible to travel in and out of Maridi. He says the same goes for the Maridi Mundri Road. Juma says several vehicles that left Maridi for Juba through Mundri before the clashes broke out last week in Juba are still stuck in Rokon west of the capital. Maridi State Acting Governor Samuel Bati confirms that roads leading to and out of Maridi are insecure. Bati says armed youth also attacked travelers in Maridi County's Rasul Payam last Monday, looting 2 vehicles of commuters heading to Maridi from Yei. Cesar Daniel, who works for the Young Women's Christian Association in Maridi State, says aside from the Maridi Mundri and Maridi Yei roads, the Maridi Yambi road is also insecure. Speaking in Arabic, Daniel says, He witnessed travelers being robbed along the Yambio-Maridi Road just yesterday.
When we were coming yesterday, we found one person was being robbed of his motorbike, laptop and money, cell phone, and we also found another person who was shot at by the armed group, and he threw the motorbike and ran away. That was between Madebe and Mokbondu.
Daniel is urging the government to immediately restore its security on all the roads in and out of Maridi so there is free movement of goods and people. Acting Governor Bati says the insecurity is affecting businesses in the state. But he is urging the people of Maridi to remain calm as the state authorities work to restore security. He also asks residents to share information with security forces. The former Western Equatoria state has seen a marked increase in armed robberies compared to last year. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Yambio.
Yei River State government and community leaders are saying they are trying to improve security in the area as well. Church leaders, civil society activists and community leaders met yesterday to talk about ways to curb insecurity in the state following an attack on Yei Market on Wednesday that left four people dead. Peter Justin has the story for VOA from Juba.
Some 230 participants who attended the meeting agreed on 15 measures to beef up security after four people were shot and killed Wednesday. Some residents in parts of the state have been fleeing their homes after hearing gunshots nearby. The Deputy Governor, Brigadier General Abraham Wane Yohana, agreed to deploy a multi-ethnic security force in the state to ensure trust between the community and security organizations. State Information Minister Stephen Lado Onesimo says the state also resolved to grant a cantonment area to the SPLA-IO to avoid clashes with the South Sudanese government forces. Lado says this would help authorities track down criminal and unknown gunmen causing insecurity in the state.
Any other unauthorized soldiers using his gun and other harmful weapons in the town and schools should be disarmed. The community leaders should identify criminals who amongst their community and report them to the authority.
Lado says those attacking innocent civilians will be arrested, investigated and tried in a court of law. Two soldiers have been arrested since Wednesday's attack. Lado says state authorities have been instructed to organize the forces to protect civilians.
The state government to visit army garrisons in the state to establish reasons behind rampant arrest of civilians by the army without any trials.
Aside from the killings in Yei Town this past week, there are reports of insecurity in Lanya County. Lado James Michael, Speaker of Lanya County Legislative Council, fled his home because of gunshots in the town. James says he fled the town because he did not want to get caught up in the crossfire. James is taking refuge in Loka with other civilians who fled their homes. Speaking from his hiding place, he says life in the bush is not easy, especially for women and children.
The terrible situation now is the matter of rains, and we have women and children who are in the bush, and there's nothing to eat at the moment, since you know it's the rain season. Yeah, we are worried because the civilian cannot access the town when the soldiers are still there.
In Lanya, more than 6,000 internal displaced persons are seeking refuge after fighting broke out in Wunduruba last year. Lado says state officials are negotiating with the army in Lanya town for the safe return of civilians. He says what happened in Yei is different, not connected to the recent fighting in Juba. State authorities are organizing forces in accordance with the state orders issued yesterday. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
And we now go for some sad news in Europe. The world is mourning the loss of life in Nice last night at a celebration of France's Bastille Day. A truck driver killed 84 people and injured more than 100 others when he steered his large truck into a crowd in Nice during a celebration of France's independent holiday. France's president says some 50 people are critically injured, many of them children. Foreigners, including Americans, are among the dead. The attacker has been identified by French police as 31-year-old Mohamed Belloul, a French Tunisian who lived in Nice Reports say security services did not suspect him of having links to terrorist or extreme groups, although he had been known to police for drug and other criminal offenses. Reporter Ivan Broadhead tells VOA's Kim Lewis that no group has claimed responsibility, although the attack was celebrated online by Islamic State supporters.
President François Hollande has, in the last hour, spoken to the French nation. He confirms that there are 84 dead from last night's terror attacks, and at least 50 people are still in critical condition, condition that he described as between life and death. Amongst those victims, it appears, are very many children.
I understand that he did visit the hospital today. So after he visited the hospital, is this when he spoke again?
That's correct. And as I said, he's confirmed that there are quite a lot of children amongst the victims. Sources at the pediatric hospital in Nice confirm that 50 children were brought in last night. It appears that two have died and 20 are still being treated.
Is there any more on the attacker? Have they found any links to terrorist or extremist organizations?
Well, it's currently not clear if the attacker, Mohamed Bouhlel, was acting alone or not. His home in the region of Nice called Les Abattoirs was raided by security services this morning. Bouhlel is 31 years old and married with three children. He apparently does not live with his wife currently, and neither is he on the French security terrorism watch list called the Fiches, although he was known to police for various social misdemeanors.
Are they looking at any other suspects?
That information is not clear at the moment, Kim. Without doubt, French security services are looking as widely as possible. I think it should be added that the French security services are actually quite saturated at the moment. The football tournament, the European Football Championships, have just wound down. There are ongoing civil protests in France regarding labor legislation, and trades unions are constantly on the street protesting that. The French army is stretched very thin, particularly by operations in the Sahel of Africa. And so I think there is this great sense at the moment that although France is trying to figure out who this guy is, as regards how to deal and cope with the broader issue of terrorism, just what does the nation do? The country has been on security alert, a state of emergency, since January 2015, when the Charlie Hebdo massacre occurred. And that state of emergency was reinforced November 13th after the attacks on the Stade de France and the Bataclan concert theatre. In fact, François Hollande, French president, yesterday at the Bastille Day celebration announced that he intended to end the state of emergency in around about 2 weeks' time. Of course, that plan has now changed.
Going forward, and with these three attacks in the past 18 months, what will be their next step?
I think if you talk to people on the streets, their view, I think, would be different perhaps to law enforcement's. I think today in the aftermath, in terms of civil society, people are really trying to figure out just why France is a target, why France has been targeted in three significant massacres in the last 18 months. And I think there are obviously various answers to that question. French people would tell you that there's perhaps a failure to integrate citizens into the country who come from old colonial nations, particularly Muslim nations like Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia, as Mohamed Bouhlel is himself a French Tunisian. I think France is considered anti-Muslim. Look at legislation like the ban on the burqa. And of course, more jihadists come from France than any other European country. Islamic State at the moment is believed to have at least two French nationals on its leadership council. I think reconciliation process and the healing process that people on the street are just beginning to talk about in terms of understanding what has happened. And then, of course, there's the far more pragmatic process of how to actually tackle and fight terrorism. The president was due to wind down the number of armed forces on the streets of the country from 10,000 to 7,000. The burden of responsibility that the police in particular have carried for 18 months now. So President Hollande does have a great challenge on his hands.
That's Evan Broadhead speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Paris. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is today's recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Amnesty International says national security operatives are still preventing South Sudanese citizens from leaving the country. Amnesty International researcher Elizabeth Dang says national security teams are ordering airline companies to block all South Sudanese men from boarding flights scheduled to leave Juba International Airport. Deng says they also have eyewitness accounts of men being blocked by road from entering Uganda at the border town of Nimule. She says there is clear evidence that the government is violating the constitutional rights of freedom of movement of South Sudanese citizens. South Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Akwe Bona Malwal, told South Sudan in Focus that the government is not preventing South Sudanese from leaving the country. The World Food Program says its main warehouse in Juba is being looted in the aftermath of the fighting that erupted days ago between the South Sudan Army and SPLA-IO forces. WFP says the warehouse contains food, fuel, and vehicles to assist hundreds of thousands of displaced people around the country. The agency is appealing to the robbers to promptly return the stolen goods and has asked for the government's help. Sean Hughes, head of WFP programs in Juba, says the warehouse has been looted for the past 2 days now. He says the warehouse was holding approximately 4,500 metric tons of food intended for poor and vulnerable people across the country. The stolen food was enough to feed more than 200,000 people for a month. It is unclear how much food remains in the warehouse. And finally, the Rwandan government says it will not arrest President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan when he visits the country tomorrow. Rwanda's Minister of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation says her country is under no obligation to arrest President Bashir, who will be attending the African Union summit tomorrow. Despite facing genocide and war crimes charges by the International Criminal Court stemming from Sudanese government attacks in Darfur, Foreign Minister Louise Mushikiwabo told journalists in Kigali yesterday that Mr. Bashir will be accorded a presidential welcome like any other head of state when he arrives in Kigali. President Bashir was indicted by the ICC in 2009 for crimes against humanity. The ICC also wants Bashir arrested and tried on 2 counts of war crimes and 3 counts of genocide allegedly committed in Sudan's western region of Darfur. The ICC has urged the Rwandan government to arrest Mr. Bashir once he steps foot in Rwanda. Mushikiwabo insists Rwanda is under no obligation to do that. The so-called Rome Statute of the ICC is the treaty that established the International Criminal Court, which has jurisdiction over persons accused of the most serious crimes of international concern. Member countries are obliged by law to arrest anyone indicted by this court. Mr. Bashir is the only head of state facing war crimes. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now take you to Burundi with the song Rukundo by Kidum.
Zanya nimbari kuno kuno mbona Nabonyuru kundari maindagu Nabonyaru findo Nakundu morondo Nabwe mbandi sese Sinamubu inga nubu menyini tangisikanwa Temera kubiki matiti ukundo Temeru rufu kwa banu Siru kwemera siru kwisera munu kundo Mfukani kundo Kirato, Kigahengama, Wima, Wisonze, Shikumukanda.
We have been listening to Kidum with the song Rukundo, which means love. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a safe evening and a peaceful weekend. We hope to meet you back here tomorrow on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Zotuera, zotuera, zotuera.